Welcome back to Sound Advice, the podcast where we explore solutions for leaders to create a better workplace, brought to you by Life Health Solutions. I'm your host, Lindam Zamani. Today, we're talking about a risk that is growing in relevance for modern businesses, disasters. IMDAT, the International Disaster Database, defines disasters as situations or events which overwhelm local capacity, necessitating a request for external assistance at the national or international level. They are unforeseen events that cause significant damage, destruction, and suffering. While South African legislation provides a framework for disaster management, it does not legally require all businesses to have a disaster risk management plan, but there are growing reasons why big businesses might want to have one. Why? Well, for one thing, floods, droughts, and wildfires are becoming more common as the climate changes, and events caused by humans, like political unrest and cyber attacks, are not as rare as they used to be. And what about power failures and pandemics? These are all realities we need to face as the world becomes more unpredictable. Without being too doom and gloom about it, proper planning can help businesses respond to and recover from disruptions to better protect their employees, maintain customer trust, and prevent financial loss. Today, we'll be exploring how leaders can better prepare for the worst. Our two guests have first-hand experience of disaster management. First, we'll be joined by Neville van Rensburg, a seasoned disaster and rescue consultant. Then, we'll hear from Charlotte Powell, Head of Public Awareness for the Disaster Risk Management Center at the City of Cape Town. And then, you won't have missed that the name of this podcast is Sound Advice. So, while you can rest assured our guests will give us some good nuggets, we also need to acknowledge that not everything they've been told with the best intentions was solid. So, we'll hear some of the worst counsel they've been given in our Bad Advice segment. First, I'm talking to Neville van Rensburg, who's worked in emergency medical services for many years. He has served as Provincial Rescue and Disaster Coordinator for the Western Cape Province Department of Health and Coordinator for the Government College of Emergency Care. Among other specializations, he deals with planning, rescue operation responses, specialized medical rescue and training and development. Neville, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's so great to be chatting to you. Perhaps the first thing we could chat about is, can you define for us what disaster might look like in a South African context? I mean, we don't really get major earthquakes here, for example. So what does disaster look like in South Africa?
You know, it is interesting. Sometimes you will find that the aircraft go down of a bus accident and people will call it a disaster, but it's not really a disaster. To make it very simple, a disaster is more where the social economic of a community has been affected. So, for instance, say like Lensburg many years back, where basically the half of the town was taken away. That's your type of disaster. And recently with the flooding, you know, in Citrusdal and other places, that's more to a disaster. But the people use the word disaster very, you know, openly. But we can understand that. I mean, they're not on the same trend or same place in we are, but more or less that is what a disaster is, you know. I always say to people where the social economic has been the effect of a community.
That makes sense. You spent many years of your career in this space. What are the common misconceptions that people have about disaster and about rescue?
Yeah, I mean, the two of them go hand by hand because you must stabilize, get the place safe, and then you need to do the rescue. And then you can continue with the disaster. Now, disaster is a continued base of things that can happen. We will go in preparedness, and we will go into response and rescue, and then we basically, I will say, we are done our job. We can help a little bit with mitigation, but where the disaster official, he starts from preparedness, response, he goes right through till again at preparedness. So they... When we leave, they need to find housing, they need to find food, they need to find to see where they can resettle the community. So that's the difference, if I can take it very simple, between the two of us.
Okay.
But we work hand in hand because all organ of states are, they have to work with disaster management.
There has to be a level of coordination there.
Yes.
So when things go wrong in a response, How often can you point to one cause, or is it more of a combination of factors?
Yeah, that's why there's leaders. In my line of work, I work 44 years on the front line. And the one thing is, if you see as a leader that the thing goes wrong, you have to quickly get it right. I mean, you have only 1 second to think. You can't dial a freight or you can't do something else. So most of the time, we are also drilled, you know, you need to take a decision.
Yeah.
If it's good or not good, but you need to do a decision. You need to do something to change it around. We are so drilled with that. If we left, so was that ruled. Yeah, things go wrong. Like I say, you know, you try to do the best.
You got to be able to think on your feet.
Yes, yes.
And make quick decisions.
You see, that's not the case where I can phone somebody or go to YouTube and look at how do you fix a car's carburetor or things like that. There's nothing like that.
Mm.
If you're there, you're there. If you have to do something, you must do it now, not 5 minutes later. Sometimes there's no 5 minutes later. So yeah, that's a challenge, you see. So it's sometimes a gray area, but that's why leaders need to know what they do. One call that will live with me forever till I die, where we were phoned one night, 1:30, and it was raining, it was cold, at Druze, close to Bodywell, where a woman and a baby was in the water, where their car went into the river, and the river was flooding. When we arrived there, everything that the training book said, we couldn't. We'd done the opposite. We know you can be criticized, but the thing was, we got all three out. All three was life. And the reality was, you know, I have to put two gentlemen of us in a water that you're not supposed to go into. But that is, you see, that is the line there you have to draw. That's a reality of doing it, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think you've got to take things on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
To determine what's the best thing for the best outcome, in which case, the lives of people. So, yeah, that's the most important thing.
But still, you need to think, you know, of the life of the people that you put in. But believe me, that you think afterwards.
I'm sure. When the adrenaline is so high.
Yeah, if something goes wrong, you will take the flak. That night, something didn't went wrong. So everybody was quiet. But yeah, that is a rescuer's life.
Sure. In your consulting work, what are some of the things you might advise your clients to implement where disaster management is concerned?
You know, I also involved with the Lions Clubs. That's community work. So what I try to tell them in the communities is they must start preparing. You know, I'll give you a simple example. Now, say for instance, there's a big fire. Now, a lot of people rush. They take now sandwiches to give to the people of good hearted. But you know what? A lot of people can't eat that sandwiches. There's so many religions. So there's so many people that don't eat meat. People need to understand a proper preparedness. You know, what do you really give? If you don't know, go and ask your local fire station or local disaster center, you know, what can you give if you want to contribute, you know? And that's the thing that I pick the most up is people bring sometimes stuff. You know, the Wuppertal fire, you won't believe. They have to put a temporary shelter up for all the stuff that was donated and they couldn't basically not use some of that stuff.
They couldn't use it.
Yes. And people need to understand a little bit of that.
Oh, no, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. For me, it's easy because it was my bread and butter and I'm still in it. But people need to understand, you know, how can they help the communities? You know what? They need to inform themselves. My opinion is there must be more community involvement also from the government side to educate the people.
Being proactive in educating communities.
And I feel there's a lack on that also with respect. There is a lack on that.
You do want a situation where communities want to contribute. They contribute meaningfully in a way that is going to really be, I guess, efficient and effective and useful to the people that are in need.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you.
When it comes to how disasters can be prevented or reduce the impact of those disasters, can you see some things that are kind of in the way of the reduction or prevention of disasters?
Well, from my opinion, if you sometimes look where they put informal settlements, let me first say that the disaster management in the Western Cape, and because I don't work with the others, so I can't comment on them, is very good and they're very up to standard. But sometimes people themselves, they go and live in floodplains. So every winter, they are flooding. That is a sort of one thing, you know, that can work if people can understand, you know, let them rather move to, say, a higher level or to a level where there's no floodplain, you know, then that can work, you see, and that's not so easy, believe me.
It's very difficult when you think about that, because then there are so many other social issues that play there that impact those kinds of circumstances. So it's tricky, I can imagine.
If you look, for example, sometimes the informal settlements, how they built it next to each other. So it's a fire starting one. I mean, the firefighters can't come in there.
It's very easy to spread.
That's pretty easy. I mean, and you've seen that there's so many risks then with that fire, you see, and that is... That's the challenges that a lot of emergency services are sit with currently.
For leaders, what do you think is the most important thing that leaders should do to keep their staff safe in the midst of a disaster?
The main thing is you must trust them. You must believe in them, because if you're really on a job, I must trust the next one, and I must trust the other one on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
They must trust me. That is for me. The most crucial one that I experienced all my years was trust and respect. You can't be a leader, you know, shouting out in their mind. You need to be passionate about your people. They must know you were there. If you must get dirty with them, you get dirty with them. It's not a question you sit now in your office. That's my opinion, you know, and I never have problems in my years, because it's all about respect and are willing to sacrifice with them.
And I'm sure in every scenario that I've ever thought about where emergency and disaster is concerned, I just have keep calm. In the middle of a disaster where staff, maybe it's a work environment, I think keeping calm is probably one of the most crucial things, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're not calm, like I say earlier also, you know, if you lose the plot, your staff, your crew lose the plot. And that's very important that you stay strong. Sometimes it's difficult, but you need to. Because of the sake of your community, you're busy rescue, and for yourself and for your team.
Can you think of a success story that you could share with us of a really effective response that was possible because of good planning and management?
Yeah, there's so many. Yeah, I think if I think on one, it was on AN7, where a truck with a lot of farmers was overturned, and somewhere people was under the truck, and... one of our doctors, Dr. Wayne Smith, he was responding also. But the way that he operated there the day and saved lives under that truck, and what he was done, you know, and that people is still today alive. And that is one of the things that I will always remember, you know, how he was willing to go into that scenario. And the job that he do, I mean, he's for our medical trauma doctor, so he can do more than us on that side. So, yeah, so that is one, but there's a thousand. I can tell you every night there's good calls.
When we spoke earlier about quick thinking and how you have to think on your feet in the midst of a disaster situation, all of the training that comes into it really has got to kick in that moment, because there's probably not a lot of time you have to plan and strategize. So I guess it's training or the preparations up to that moment that really assist where that is concerned.
No, that's very true. I mean, that is why exercises is also important. A lot of people think sometimes exercises, say a fire drill, for instance, at the building, they will think, you know, it's a waste of time. It's not a waste of time.
Oh, yeah. They never take it seriously.
Yeah. And the problem is, when it's going to happen, there's so many cases in the world that where the people was exercising, they couldn't understand why. And at the end of the day, it really happens. So, exercises. And like you say, I mean, you need to think on your feet, and you need to understand your work before. I mean, you can't arrive there and say, oh, what is this? What? You need to know your work.
Thanks so much for your insights, Neville. Before you go, we'd love to hear about some of the worst advice you've ever received in our Bad Advice segment.
That's Bad Advice.
Joining us for this segment is Charlotte. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thank you for having me.
In your careers, a small wrong turn can end up with dire consequences. What did someone say to you, maybe it was early on, maybe it was more recent, that turned out to be misguided advice? Let's start with you, Neville.
Yeah, the advice that I got was when I went to study. Some of the advice that I was having was, you know, it's not for our line of work, you know, and the advice was not good. At the end of the day, I've done what I wanted done. So the advice that I got was not good. And then sometimes when we were on scenes, you get sometimes advice, because sometimes you got very clever people arrive there. And I learned quickly, you know, some of the advices can't be very good. But like I say, my advice and the biggest advice was when I joined the service, a lot of people say to me, why do you want to go to I started in the fire service in 79. I mean, I'm glad I didn't follow their advice.
That's great. So at least you know how to discern there.
And how about you, Charlotte? What did someone tell you thinking it'd be a pearl of wisdom when it was actually the opposite?
All right, so I'll share something, but on a lighter note. So about 2 weeks ago, I was asked to join our provincial climate change office. There was a delegation of international delegates coming to our city, and it was everything to do with climate change. And I had to share what we're doing in disaster risk management about climate change, what our plans and how our climate change action plans are doing. I met with the delegates and the team at Stellenbosch at the hotel, and the brief that I was given was that I was going to share our stories and share what we are doing, and because the regions that they represented was similar to the same kind of climate that we have here in our city, Cape Town. So we were on our way to the premier's residence, and we're gonna have meetings there with him and share some thoughts. But I was really like prepared because it was like, you know, very important delegation of people coming, and we had to put our best foot forward. And on the bus towards Stellenbosch, traveling towards Cape Town, people started questioning me and asking questions about Cape Town. And I was so prepared for the climate change action work, but actually on the bus, I ended up as a tour guide. So sometimes you are so prepared for wanting to do the right thing, but sometimes you are caught off guard. And in disaster management is actually everybody's business. And you sometimes get put on the spot. Sometimes you're not the expert, but you try and find ways to give the best advice.
Wow. Yeah, I suppose it's never a dull day in this industry for sure. And that must have been a big surprise for you, Charlotte.
Yes. And, you know, sometimes you're thinking, okay, you live in this beautiful city, but actually you don't know everything about your city. And especially when you put on the spot to, you know, to answer questions about people that's visiting your city for the first time.
Wow. Well, thanks again, both of you, for sharing those stories with us. Neville, we'll say goodbye to you now as we explore the topic further with Charlotte.
Thank you very much.
Accessing quality emergency medical services, EMS, for your employees and other stakeholders has never been simpler. As market-leading specialists in health risk management, LifeHealth Solutions has provided outcomes-based health services to organizations across various industries for over 30 years. We can conduct emergency response risk assessments and develop the necessary management plans for you, ensure compliance, and streamline your operations. Our coordinated medical response services are available 24/7, 365. Tap on the link in the show notes for more. As the head of public awareness and preparedness for the Disaster Risk Management Center of the City of Cape Town, which is known for its focus on service delivery, you must face a lot of pressure, Charlotte. Let's hear more about how good communication and good governance can help leaders and citizens in worst-case scenarios.
Yes, so in South Africa, we play a very critical role in ensuring that we are preparing and responding to and recovering for any type of disaster. It starts off with having a risk assessment. We need to have a risk assessment completed, and in the city of Cape Town, we've completed a scientific risk assessment, which tells us the hazards that the city is faced with, like droughts, fires, flooding, and then also man-made disasters like industrial accidents. And then we also needed to complete a community-based risk assessment. And this is when the community identify the hazards. And sometimes it's not similar. Science will tell you one thing, but community will tell you a different thing. They always talk about the stressors like alcohol abuse, drug abuse, crime, gangsterism, and so forth. Once we've completed the scientific risk assessment, we now need to put plans in place. It's our role to mitigate the risk and establish protocols for recovery and response. Another important part of what we do is public education and awareness. We need to now go into communities and educate them about the hazards that their city is faced with. So that's an ongoing process. And then a bigger part of the role that we also play is coordination. We play a very important coordination role with various stakeholders, including government departments, agencies, NGOs, community organizations. And then we also need to ensure that we have disaster management volunteers. And yes, according to our Disaster Management Act of 2002, all metro municipalities are required to have a disaster management center.
So we know that bad things happen and things that can't always be controlled, especially when it comes to the weather. It's really how we plan and respond that makes all the difference. What kind of disasters have you dealt with in your career?
Okay, so Cape Town faces significant challenges due to our informal settlements. We have many informal settlements in our city, over 300 informal settlements, and about 1 million people living in informal settlements. So those are our most vulnerable communities. So things that really is challenging is always the issue about fires. The risk of fires in informal settlements poses a real risk. Over 200 individuals die each year of informal settlement fires. So that's one thing. And then also during our winter period, we have a lot of communities that is displaced because of the flooding risk. And many of our communities, they are living in natural water courses. And this is a challenge for us because the only thing that we can do is to relocate them. And that's not always an easy thing to do. Cape Town has a very high water table with limited runoff capacity, and our residents that are living in these areas are always exposed, especially during the winter period, to the risk of flooding. But for me, it was the COVID-19 pandemic. This was a profound global health crisis, and it was very overwhelming in both the public and the healthcare systems, but also not far reaching the social and economic repercussions. We've worked with communities that not only lost family members, but job losses, and this affected their families, and some of them didn't even have access to healthcare and support services. So the COVID-19 pandemic really stood out for me as one of the most challenging disaster situations that I ever had to be involved in.
Yeah, definitely. COVID was like nothing we've really faced in like recent history globally. So yeah, I can imagine how testing that must have been.
Yes.
You focus on helping communities be more prepared for natural disasters. What does that preparation look like when you go into the communities? How do you measure the success of a disaster response?
Emergency planning begins at home. We must ensure that every family has a plan in place to deal with any eventuality. If I had to ask you today, how prepare you for a natural disaster? How prepared are you and your family for the natural disaster? What measures do you have in place? Because most people rely on government to help them. Yes, that is the case. But we also need our residents to be more prepared. They need to know the type of hazards that their city is faced with. So if you live in Cape Town, you must know there is a risk for fire. There is a risk for flood. We have climate change risk as well. You know, since 2018, the city has been in a very severe drought, and we've just missed day zero. It was actually our residents that saved the day with all the water saving. But that is the kind of thing that you need to be more prepared with. So we really go into our communities and we encourage our residents to be more prepared and to know what to do in a situation.
And I mean, I love what you said about how disaster management really starts at home, because it is the action of all of us as individuals that can have the greatest impact as well, over and above what, you know, your city or your government can do.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there something that leaders can do to make the work of departments like yours more effective?
Yes, definitely. Just as families must be prepared for any type of emergencies, businesses too. We want to encourage businesses to be able to deal with any type of crisis. But the preparation starts with having a clear emergency and evacuation procedure, training your staff, designated emergency personnel, also conducting regular evacuation drills, and by ensuring that your employees are familiar with safety protocols. And we also want to encourage business to also come on board with government, especially those that can contribute in terms of building resilience in communities and also in the businesses that they operate in.
No, for sure. Where do you think people are most likely to fall short when they are dealing with a crisis?
For me, I think with the work that I've done in communities, and this is always a thing that stands out for me, an effective emergency response begins with knowing the correct emergency number to call. Many people are unaware about the emergency number to call to get an emergency response. And we've seen in our communities, people are confused about numbers. They phone the police if they need an ambulance. They phone a cell phone company if they need help. So for me, it is very important that people know which number to call if there's an emergency situation so that they can get the right emergency response. And then for us, it is also about educating the public and to be properly prepared for any kind of an emergency. And for us in our city, for any life-threatening emergency, we always tell our public to call the 021-480-7700 number for any life-threatening emergency. So calling the right emergency contact center to get the proper emergency response is a start of help and getting the right type of help.
Can you repeat that number again, please, for the sake of our listeners?
For Cape Town, it would be the Public Emergency Communication Center on 021-480-7700.
Thanks for that. I mean, I think when people are in a disaster, sometimes your brain just freezes and goes blank. What advice do you have there? I know what you said about the confusion around numbers. What would you advise people to do? Should they have numbers visible somewhere in their homes, or what do you think? Because I know in an emergency situation, my mind goes completely blank.
Absolutely. So it's best to have the emergency number saved in your phone under emergency so that it can be quick. Because sometimes we even forget the numbers. Just people panic. But the thing for me is it's sometimes not easy, but people not to panic, to be clear and direct when they do make that emergency call, to share essential information, straightforward language. And then also, if you are in a very bad situation at work, something may be happening at work that's now become a crisis, there should be use of multi-channels to communicate, to get the message out there to say what the situation is at the business, and also get a designated spokesperson, someone that can probably get all the information at one central point and then to communicate that. Also keep everybody informed of the emergency situation and then also encourage feedback. And most important for me is for, and I know this is a very difficult thing to do, but to remain calm. Try to remain calm in an emergency situation.
Definitely. Yeah, we mentioned it with Neville as well. It is a very important thing to remember. Taking a breath and being able to communicate as clearly as you can, I think, is definitely important. Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us today and being generous with your time. I know our listeners will benefit from your knowledge and experience.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Not only have our guests given us some practical advice on how to be better prepared as a community in a crisis, but they've also shown the importance of good planning and governance from our leaders and policymakers. It's actually more than a nice to have when it comes to saving lives and property. What's one insight you're going to share with a colleague after listening to our conversation today? For me, I think what Neville said about trust being the most important part about keeping people safe as a leader really stood out. Also, finding out what is most needed in a disaster should you wish to help is super important, and that you should consult with your local fire station or disaster management center before time. Finally, I love what Charlotte said about disaster management being everyone's business. Emergency planning really must begin at home and in our businesses so that everyone is prepared and knows what to do in an emergency. Keeping the right emergency numbers for the right services easily available to you at all times is a must, and your phone, of course, is the most practical place to do that. I'm Linda Mzamane, and this has been the Sound Advice Podcast, brought to you by Life Health Solutions. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts so that you don't miss any upcoming episodes. For more information and helpful resources, please check the show notes. Until next time.